all over North Africa and up into Europe. Not too far up into Europe, but I had gone up into Europe. And it was a real learning experience for me, because I was exposed to a tremendous number of old books. And they were pretty cheap. They weren't expensive, because they were quite ordinary and common over there, particularly up at Oxford and Cambridge and some other places across North Africa, and you didn't have to pay too much for them. And I was absolutely stunned. I've told you this story many times before, and I know you get tired of hearing it, but here it is again. It helps you to understand why I believe like I do and why you can have confidence in it. You can have confidence in it because I back it up with the scriptures. If I didn't do that, I wouldn't even present it. But I discovered that the preachers over there that were migrating over here during the evangelical age and the age of the great awakening, back in the 1700s, early 1700s to early 1800s, they taught what those preachers in the hills in northern Arkansas taught. And I guess that would be expected. Can you still hear me? I guess that would be expected. But I never even had thoughts like that. I was taught up there the stuff that I teach you and a lot of it. And then I just thought, well, this is right, correct. But by the time I went overseas, they were teaching all kind of stuff. I was back in the woods up there. And they just still teach out of these same old books. You ought to see some of them I got over there in the library. I got one of them that's I've got from, it's one of the first Bibles ever written on the European continent, right after they got the press. And they believe the same thing. And so I was stunned, you know, and I noticed that up until 1827, that was the majority thing. And before 1740, everybody taught you what I teach. So what happened? Well, they changed prophecy teaching. They also changed doctrinal preaching on other subjects. And there weren't that many heretics around up until the evangelical age and the Great Awakening arose. And then it started popping up everywhere. And I was amazed at how easy it was for them to slip it in. Because people back there, they were interested in one thing. We want to live the good life. I saw something on television today that it stunned me. They had a sort of a circus with dancing girls, and they were jumping around in their, you know, shorts, and they had artists, and the Pope sat there and watched the whole thing. It was inside the place where they worship. You know, not the place where the chairs were, but where the Pope sits on the throne. He was sitting up there on the throne. And all these dancers were dancing around. I looked out there. They had a huge audience. They had chairs for them to sit down. It's a big, huge cathedral-type thing, and it's part of the Vatican. And he made this statement. I may not get it exactly right, but I'll try to. He said, "It is wonderful to see that God's people are exercising the talents that they have, both from the secular and spiritual world, here in these last times." And I thought there, and I said, "Big buddy, you may be charming, you may be meek, you may be mild, you may be a lot of things, but you ain't somebody sent down here from God to tell people that, because of the difficulty we have and they should have with realizing you cannot serve God and mammon." It doesn't say you cannot go to church. It does not say you cannot do this, you cannot do that, you cannot do this. It just says you can't serve God and mammon. Now, in the Greek language, sometimes they have an absolute key word. And that key word is serve. Okay. I told you last night something I probably never should have told you. I came to this church because I really didn't have a lot of choice. When I got up here and I looked this bunch over, and at that time, I had a pretty high opinion of myself. I thought, good Lord, I've got 7 children. And I said, I can't go there. I said, I'll have to work all the time at some other job. I'll have to drive back and forth to the seminary. See, I knew I was supposed to go to the seminary, but I didn't know which church I was supposed to go to. But, Ken, you know, I wasn't what you would call a yucky preacher. People liked me in the church, and it was unanimous when they called me. So, I knew they wanted me to come, but I had all these kids. And we had to pay for them. And we had gone through times where we got down the last can of beans. But I knew this is where I belonged. Now, I'm not trying to make myself seem like a hero. The other guys in the seminary had come up here, and they didn't want them. That's all they'd ever had was seminary preachers. And Danny Chappell came to me, and he said, Mac, he said, listen, he said, I can't get anybody to go up there and preach the view of a call. He said, would you go up there and preach the call? I said, well, yeah, and I'll go. And then John Penn called me in that afternoon and said, they need somebody up there. Can't get anybody up at Dardanelle. So I came up here, and we came across the bridge, and we left the kids with Mom and strolled in here, and I guess they thought there was just 2 of us. They probably never called me if they'd known there was any other. We strolled in here, you know, and we came over the bridge, and we went in here, and we kept waiting for the people to show up. Past time starting, I looked around. And
when y'all came, the attendance doubled.
And I looked and I thought, oh my. And so then after I said, oh my, I said, well, who do you think you are? Inside me, you know. I said, they need a pastor. I had had some of the churches that I'd preached at, and they wanted me for a pastor. Because I could drop rocks through the sea and talk about volcanoes and all that stuff. I don't know why you wanted me, but, well, God wanted you to want me. So I came. But I had been here about 10 years before I ever was, my ego was ever down below the depths of this church. And my ego was destroyed. But it kept weaving back in and out. And until we went through 2 episodes in this church, we've been through, well, actually 3 episodes, where people were, I thought they were going to run me off. Then I knew God wanted me here because I hadn't done anything wrong. I'm not the most pleasant fellow in the world, but I knew I needed to be more pleasant. Put on my happy face, so I did. But I belong here. I belong here. I belong here. And I thank the world of every one of you. And I don't know what I'd do without you all. Well, I just have to go back to loving God and preaching to an empty building. Now, the vast majority of preachers today, and this is what amazed me, and I'm not putting down my brother in the seminary, they didn't know what I was talking about. The vast majority of preachers today do not realize the major revisions to prophetic teachings that were brought in during the age of the Great Revisionists from 1740 to 1832. I do not accept the majority of the revisions that were made during this period, and I discovered at the seminary that they were teaching some of this stuff that I'd been taught back in the hills. Well, what do a bunch of people back in the hill know? I didn't say all of it, some of it. And they had different positions on the rapture, but they all primarily held the first of the week. And I thought, that's not right. Because I didn't have to have a bunch of degrees to look over there in Revelation 11 chapter and see when it occurred. And there were preachers that believed that all over the place up there. So I said, where I was. I challenge anyone reading this to produce this has been on the internet since 2003. I have never received one challenge. to produce a pre-1740 book on prophecy based on Bible interpretation that shows a diagram dividing the tribulation period into two sections, each one 3.5 years in length, with the first resurrection occurring at the beginning of the first 3.5 year period. There isn't one. There isn't one. Now, if I hadn't been over in Europe and I hadn't looked over there, and all, they're old books. If everywhere I went, I hadn't contacted the old preachers in that area and found out if they had any old books and read them or bought them from them, if they, or from their wives if they had died, I would like for someone to show me a published book before 1740 showing a diagram dividing the tribulation period into two sections, each one 1,260 days in length, with the first resurrection occurring at the beginning of the second period of 1,200 days. Well, I knew the second of the week position was wrong. But I put this in here. I said, well, maybe they'll leave me alone. So finally, I took this thing out of a book of a first of the weeker. And there was this thing up there just like this. It didn't say first of the week or anything on it. And it had 1, 2, 3 blocks. The first one said, first to 1,260 days. The last block said, last 1,260 days. And in the middle of it, it had a little thing, about not quite the size of the other, but almost said, tribulation period. Aha! So I said, oh boy. So the next time I went out to one of these churches where I was having to defend myself, but they never would put anybody up to challenge me. Never. So I just went ahead and I just took that thing. You've seen me do it. I took that thing. I didn't have the money for it. I didn't even know they had lasers. And I got an old fishing cane I had and cut off the top of it and put some kind of a white-looking thing on top of it. And I used that. Remember that old thing? And I'd go up and down, up and down, up and down. I'd start over there at the first of the week. I said, I might as well tell you where I believe the rapture is going to occur, when it's going to occur before we start. Boy, they all woke up. So I went, here it is, right here. And I went up on the first of the week, and it kept going up and down, real slow, all the way up to the top of the diagram, all the way down to the very last one where it said second of Advent, which is the absolute end time. They hate that. And they sit back there like that. And then I went on, and I just presented blowing up the world. Well, finally, I was down there with I.K. Cross. And then I went on down to Ray Brooks. And in 1992... the Lord didn't mind what I was doing because I think that he might have led me to do that so that I could teach him what he wanted me to teach him about blowing up the world. He wanted me to do that. And he trained me for it and everything else. He could have got a rock to do it. That's what Leonard used to say. He could have risen up a rock. And he could have. But he picked, and not many wise after the flesh are chosen. Yet I was wise after the flesh. But he chose me. He didn't say nobody. So I went ahead and I started doing that, and that stopped it. But Griffin, O.H. Griffin, or J.B. Griffin, who was down at the seminary bookstore and had been a prophecy teacher for a long time, I went by and I talked to him about it, and he said, Mike, that's something you just got to decide for yourself. And then I went down to Ray Brooks, and he said, well, I wish you'd go ahead and do it. He said, they've been prosecuting me for years for that. And so he had stopped doing it down there just about. Nobody liked him. School over, men didn't want to have a thing to do with him. But Ray came from the old school, too. So I ran into a bunch of Texas preachers down there believed it. And I said, okay, that's it. In 1992, I started doing it. And I was the dimpled darling of the American Baptist Association. Brother, that stopped. But anyway, I'm just telling you, so when you go through this, you'll know there's a lot more to it than most people think. Okay. For that matter, I would also like to see a published book before 1770 based on Bible interpretation that taught the rapture would occur at the middle or beginning of the tribulation period. Now, it is possible. Now, look, I wrote this back in 2003. I haven't found it yet. It is possible that a pre-1740 published book does exist somewhere that shows the tribulation period divided into two sections, each one 3.5 years in length, pre-trib, a pre-trib position. Maybe one exists, but I have looked long and hard for it through many musty religious book archives in the U.S. and abroad, and I have yet to find it. I went into places where I was not allowed to touch the book. They had a woman who was specially trained in these places, and she would go in there with special types of gloves on and a little thing that you could slide underneath there that it wouldn't hurt it at all. And she would pick it up and open it, and I would have to sit there with her hands after on it, and I would sit there and have to read what I was going to read. And that's how careful I was. Prophetic teachers of this generation have lived with a two-division diagram so long, they think they came over on the Mayflower. But basically, these diagrams were a product of the first of the week rapture positions, which is such an ingrained part of prophecy teaching today. The so-called first of the week position, as well as what is known as the middle of the week position, a lot of people thought I held that, cannot be found in existence in any published book about the Bible before 1740. So as I was going and looking for that, to find that one about the first of the week position, I finally got this guy, this wealthy man now who writes books, believes in the first of the week position, and he showed me this one about Morgan, and he said, this proves that there was a first of the week position. I looked it up, and that old boy, he may have a lot of money, but he doesn't read very well. It's the second of the week position that's in there. Because Morgan didn't believe that they believed there were only 1,335 days. And I read that thing over, looked in, I said, he believes, he doesn't believe that. He's not a first of the weeker. He's a mid-tribber. So I've got all that documented. They know I've got it documented. Can you imagine what a stir that would be if I was allowed to go and debate in our churches about that? I wasn't ready to. Now I'm a tired, sick old man. Well, I'm not sick. I want you to feel sorry for myself. I'm a tired old man. I am tired. So give me, just every once in a while, say, would you please help poor old tired Brother McNamara? And you don't have to throw that doctor thing in there, because I didn't use that doctor thing from the start. I told Imogene when I could start writing prescriptions for penicillin, I said, you can put doctor in front of it. In fact, it is the term weak appropriated by the revisionist that is largely responsible for the mass exodus from Orthodox prophetic teaching, which occurred in the late 1800s and early 19th centuries. The bulk of all prophetic teaching of today is based directly or indirectly on the revisionist teaching on Daniel 9:27, which is, to a large extent, positional in the early 19th century. If the teaching on Daniel 9:27 by the revisionist is incorrect, then much of today's prophetic teaching is an error. I would say at least 70% of it. When I first came up here, it was about 90%. I believe this is the cause, and I have been labeled as a revisionist myself for it. But they will not debate me. This old boy, he didn't know any better, and he was a seventh trumpet. He wanted me to come out there and do one at the Oklahoma Seminary, Missionary Baptist Seminary. So I strolled up out there. He had this old boy that was supposedly the expert of Oklahoma on the first of the week. I tore up the floor with him. I shouldn't say I did, but the scriptures tore it up. And the word got around, and that's the only one I was ever called to. He had the weakest case I've ever heard of any man in my life. It wasn't even a case. He said, and I have been labeled as a revisionist because of it. I am certain that the great Bible expositor, now you don't know who my hero is, it's B.H. Carroll. The only thing, and everybody's got a flaw, and I've got a whole bunch of them. I don't deny that. I don't just have one. And if I knew what the others were, I'd change them. But I do have a lot because I keep discovering them. Now, B.H. Carroll was he did not believe there was a millennial reign. You say, well, that's peculiar. Well, you'd be surprised how many people back didn't believe it then. You say, well, Brother McElroy, they sure should have. Now, listen very carefully to what I'm going to say. Israel had not regathered at the time of B.H. Carroll. Man alive, you would be amazed how many missionary Baptist preachers back there believed that there was no such thing as a millennial. And right out here, where Nellie Walker and Harold, that little church out there, it was one single church at one time. And they had two men in there that fought like a cat of dogs over it. One of them believed it was first of the week, the other believed it was the last. One of them believed in the first of the week, the other one didn't. And one of them believed there was a millennial reign, and the other one didn't. And burnt a church, and all the preachers in that area got in a big argument out there, and it was about 50-50. This was just this before I came up here. And so they voted, and they split into two associations. And Luther Riddle was in that bunch over there he didn't believe there was a millennial reign either. Well, what caused that? In 1948, Israel had gotten back into Israel, and they were regathered, and you had to have a millennium. Now, I'm just telling you, that's plain and simple, and that's the reason they switched. But B.H. Carroll, he was sure that the first part of the tribulation period had already been fulfilled. He believed there were only 60 weeks left. Listen, B.H. Carroll, much, much smarter man than I will ever be. I am a good synoptic analyst, but listen, I got books over there. I got books in the house. I can stack them up for you. Back in that day and era where they believed in that stuff. But the thing I know they were right about was the seventh trumpet rapture. But if Israel had been back in the land, that bunch would have been just like B.H. Carroll. B.H. Carroll, who continued to believe the pre-1740 teachings until his death, were correct in what he taught concerning Daniel's 70th week. For you see, before 1827, the majority of Orthodox preachers were convinced that the He in Daniel 9:27 was Jesus Christ, not the Antichrist. They were right. Isn't that amazing? Now, when you sit in all those churches, you went around, you know Missionary Baptist. Do you know that they believed that the first of the week position was correct? And I'll tell you who did it, Dr. Schofield. And he came over here and he heard the master of it from Europe speak about it, and he bought it, and Dr. Schofield bought it, and he was a Presbyterian. And that's back when all the missionary Baptists started wearing those white shoes and blue suits and going to the conferences up there. I always wondered what that was. I was not old at that time. And they were Schofield Bibles. Well, then I included Dr. Schofield and where he got it and what he did. He was instrumental in doing it over here. A couple of men were, but he was the major one. And the fellow that brought it over here, Lord, what was his name? I'll get to it eventually. We are not waiting for a week of 7 years to be fulfilled. Why not? Because Jesus has already fulfilled most of the first 3.5 years. We are facing a tribulation period of the last 3.5 years, preceded by a much briefer period of peace than what many are expecting. It was then I discovered what was going to cause the Antichrist to cease some of the activity, and all of a sudden, I understood why Israel was going to attack them. Israel is the only group over there that has a sense that God gave a cracker, and quite frankly, most of the Democrats, they don't have it either, some of the independents are all right. But most of the missionary Baptists, like Tommy said, they're actually saying, you know, where's the promise of his coming? And I'll get around to that. You see, I wanted to know what happened under all this. Well, Anna Mae, you were here. Ken, you were here. Can you imagine what would have happened in this church with 9 people? Well, we had Imogene and I and 7 children, so that would have made 9 people. All of a sudden, we'd have 9 people, and they wouldn't be the same ones that start here. That would have sounded crazy, wouldn't it? Well, wouldn't it, Anna Mae? It would have. Well, I asked God to give me wisdom, discernment, and understanding. But I knew what I was doing when I came up here. I was proud, haughty, and arrogant, and thought too much of myself, and I'm very ashamed before God. And sometimes it gets irritated. I keep asking to forgive me. And I teach that you don't have to keep asking him. But man, I feel awful bad about that, because I down deep inside, I knew different. I knew that it was me that needed to change largely. Oh, I knew all you needed to. Everybody does. But I'm thankful for that. Now, we are not waiting for a week of 7 years to be fulfilled. Why not? Because Jesus has already fulfilled the period of the last 3.5 years, preceded by a much briefer period of peace than many are expecting. That's when I figured out where it said that there's a first come a great falling away, and where it indicated that there would be a destruction of the Jews and all that stuff. I suddenly realized that's it. That's where it is. It's a hoodna. Now, when I went over to North Africa, if they had asked me, what do you think of hoodna? I said, well, I've never eaten any. I would have. I didn't know what it was. But when I got over there, I started thinking. I started watching those people, and I said, you know, those old preachers over there in the hill were right. So I made some friends over there. I learned how to barter. Not as well as Ken.
I don't
worry. No, the devil, you don't. He had him down on his knees, butt-breaking. Not same, same, not same, same at base, you know. And that guy. Anyway, I implore you to take a look at what was taught by most Orthodox prophetic teachers before 1827 about Daniel's 70th week. It is fully exposited in our prophecy archives and on updates 55, 56, 57, 58. When they get over there and start reading that set, then I won't say I've got them, but the Bible's got them. When they go through those scriptures there, it's about Micah. And see, they used to teach that in all of our churches when I was a boy. But they stopped teaching it. I couldn't understand why. Because it was the one thing that made sense to me. And some of this stuff in Daniel, you had to link all that stuff together. And I thought, good Lord, I'm a synoptic analyst and I can do it. But I said, I've got to put it on the wall and walk back and forth. And quite frankly, that walking back and forth, finally I said, most of this is not right. And it was prophecy. Well, what would the devil attack first? Well, he'd attack salvation and the doctrine of it, the teaching of it, but the power of it is so great that he didn't have much of a chance. Something else I'm going to show you about receiving people, talking about saved people, but not to doubtful disputation. Go and look that up in Strong. But not to doubtful disputation. You know why I keep telling you about those people I ran off? It's not because I'm Captain Marvel wearing a cape running in a booth and saying, Shazam! You're not supposed to take people in the church to doubtful disputations. Now, that was not the problem over there with what's this old boy's name that was running them off, wouldn't let them join. Diotrephes?
Oh, yeah.
Diotrephes?
Diotrephes.
Kenneth? You're getting worse than me. No, you ain't worse than me yet. Wait till you get there. You'll come in and say, what are you doing here to Donna? Where's my wife? What was I talking about? I ran a man off that wanted to join this church so bad he could taste it. Personally came and said I said, well, you got to change your belief. And I said, then I've got to rebaptize you. He said, I can't change what I believe. I said, well, what do you want to join here for? He believes you could lose your salvation. The words got pretty heated over there. But finally, I just told him, I said, you want to go on back? I said, I'm not going to present you to the church. And I said, if you come forward, I'll tell him exactly what you believe. That's a doubtful thing to say. I don't know what you meant to say. He gave a good profession of faith, but man, we've been in a false church for so long, they had brainwashed. I ran off a set of people over. I ran off a creek baptism.